Just before this call, Jenna told me that she had $700 worth of clothes in her.
Don't out me like that.
Hello, everybody. Happy Wednesday. We are back with a brand new episode, and we have been waiting for this one for a hot minute.
Oh my goodness, yes. For those of you who don't know who we are Jenna and Sophie, and we are two 20-something-year-old best friends who started a podcast to create a community of those of us just figuring this all out. Every other week, we bring you advice, guest mentors, and personal anecdotes so you never had to say, I wish I knew that in my 20s.
One of the reasons we created this platform is that we feel like we have a lot of personal experience and guidance to provide on topics that we all need to walk through in our 20s. And we hate to admit it, but managing finances is not our zone of genius.
We've toyed with the idea of just avoiding the topic altogether, but that really wasn't fair to you because it's definitely something we have been struggling with and wanting to know more about. So instead of doing that, we've decided to document our journey of learning to become financially autonomous, financially independent, and financially savvy. And we're going to learn right alongside you as you go.
And Jenna and I are the first to admit that managing personal finance can be super overwhelming. And through this episode, we're not trying to expect you to be an accountant or raise the next generation of Wall Street employees. That is not what we're trying to do here. All we're trying to help you do is make the idea of managing your personal finances just a little bit more manageable. What I'm learning and what Jenna's starting to learn as well is that managing your own finances is actually a very liberating experience, and it's very comforting to know that we have the ability and the freedom to set ourselves up to be financially free in our future.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't know if you've experienced this, Sophie, but for me as a young woman, I've often found that it's been embedded in me that finances is not supposed to be my bread and butter. And you know, it's a man's responsibility to completely handle your finances. And I think that can be so incredibly harmful. And it's in general made me want to stay away from learning about finances and even approaching math in general. So I think giving the opportunity to women to learn how to take over their finances and kind of become the drivers of their own financial car is so necessary and important and can be such a pivotal moment in how we respect women in society.
I like that, Jenna. Become the driver of your own financial car.
It's a journey, 100%. And I think the more we see it as that and the more we realize that we can be in the driver's seat, the more we can kind of change the conversation and the way we talk about it.
Exactly. So this episode, we're going to dive deep into how to save for your wedding, what the hell a mortgage is, and if you're really too late to start investing.
Ooh.
We'll even include some of your personal questions that you asked us on our social media platforms with guest mentor, the financial fortune teller, Kristen Davey.
Woohoo! So we are so excited to have Kristen here. I am over the moon. I'm so glad I get to hear some of her professional advice. For those of you who don't know who this financial powerhouse is, Kristen is a certified professional financial advisor who works with clients of all ages, incomes, and knowledge points to make finance fun. Kristen has gained a following of over 1,000 followers in just 1 year, very impressive, and they all learn from her relatable and comforting advice, and we are so glad she's here to answer all of our money-related questions and concerns.
I'd personally like to say that I am a huge fan of her Tip Tuesdays, which do not always happen on Tuesdays, and I anxiously await them every day, and it's just, I think everyone who follows her knows the Tip Tuesdays and also know that they're not also on Tuesdays, and it's just the highlight of my day.
I have had so many funny conversations with Sophie where she said to me on like a Wednesday or Thursday, oh, I'm so excited for Tip Tuesday. And I was like, what do you mean? And then she explained it to me and it makes so much sense now, but she waits for it every single week. So she is definitely, I would say, the biggest fan I know of Tip Tuesdays. We'd like to let Kristen fully introduce herself. And just if you can, Kristen, give us the quickest little elevator pitch style intro to you. So tell us who you are, how you got here, and maybe what even got you interested in the field.
Awesome. I'm so excited to be here, girls. I think you've already hit so many great points on the head just in our initial little talk here. I think that for me, finance, sort of like Jenna said, has never been that open for women. A lot of women feel uncomfortable about it, especially younger women. And some things that a lot of people don't realize is that women are like the largest emerging market on the planet in the history of the planet. Like, that's crazy. And then you're saying that all of these women don't feel comfortable talking about finance or handling their finance. There's over 1 million entrepreneurs that are female in Canada alone. So to me, I had this massive passion and this super excited approach to saying, I want to make finance fun for females. And it's not just that you have to rely on a man. And if you are running your own business or aspire to be your own professional, you need to know these sorts of things. And so the path to the financial fortune teller was definitely, like Sophie said, it a year in the making, but truthfully stemmed from working with, in other forms of work, a lot of females who say, oh my gosh, you make it so understandable, Kristen, and it's something I can relate to. And from that, I took all of this and thought, you know what, why don't we get it out there so that we can just educate more women across the board and make more people enjoy it and feel confident talking about it.
Wow.
So that's sort of how I got to where I am today.
That's very cool. And I mean, correct us if we're wrong, but we're pretty sure you didn't start out right in this field. Did you start out in forensic science?
Yes, that is correct. I was always a big, big fan of the medical industry, but I had this like deep-seated fear of working with somebody who was alive in case I did something wrong. So I decided working with the dead was probably a lot
Right.
easier. So I specialized in forensic science. And so for me, what kind of helped me is that it gives me this very analytical look. Like I have a very unique, I ask a lot of questions because that's what forensics is. It's literally law around asking questions. And so when I was in my 20s, I asked a lot of questions around finance. I was lucky enough to be raised in a household where we talked openly about money. It was a very positive conversation. And so it let me have the motivation and the confidence to talk about it. And so I looked at what I wanted in my future. I asked a ton of questions. And from there, I started to pivot away from forensics and realize that I love finance. Like, I love the idea of my true passion in life is making money. It's not what everyone wants to hear, but truthfully, like money makes people happy. You can't, you know, there's a saying like, oh, you know, money can't buy you everything or money can't buy you happiness. It can't, because in reality, our entire life is based around money, right? If it's like, oh, I want to have a very secure and happy family and that will make me happy, but that is coming from being able to put a house around them and put food on the table. All a factor of your money. And so for me, I realized that the answer to all of these questions and all of this pondering I had was putting together proper plans and understanding and having control of my future and control of my income and control of my finances. So that's when I started to see the change and the pull towards more helping people and helping them feel as confident as I was feeling around money.
Wow, that's so cool. I mean, Sophie, we were talking about this before, and she said, do you realize our whole life is based around numbers?
Yeah,
And
it's
it's
true.
disorienting to think about it that way, but it's true. We can break everything down into numbers, and the more we fear numbers, the more we fear basically finding our way through life. So, yeah.
That's exactly
I
it.
think it's
And
also.
it's interesting too. Yeah, because it's interesting because when you fear numbers, you also then just put it on the back burner, right? So then all of your hopes and dreams that you want sort of just keep getting pushed aside to living in the now, which is great because I'm a firm believer in live in the now, but also start to plan for your future. And that's kind of that balance you need to find early on in life.
I think it's really interesting. You said that money can buy happiness, and it's true. And I think that it's become almost like a dirty topic that people are like, oh, I don't care about money. And especially for women, they're like, oh, well, I don't need it. But it's true. It's something that needs to be destigmatized and that it's okay to value creating money. And I think that was a really important thing that you just said there.
Yeah, especially from females'
Yeah.
perspective, because men have a great value of money. It's a lot of times females don't.
That's true. And Kristen, it hasn't been lost on us that your main target demographic is mainly women with your beautiful pink Instagram feed. And just like us and our listeners, we want to know why empowering women to take on their money means so much to you specifically.
I think it's because I am a self-employed female myself, and I know the value of understanding your own funds. I run our household. I am the money manager, obviously, in my house, and it just is I think, a liberating feeling. And there's a big movement right now towards females in the workforce, and females being self-employed, and females being more than just stay-at-home moms, and having this need to just fulfill what you want to do as a woman. And to me, a big factor of that and being able to compete in a male-dominated industry or world comes with the understanding of finance, because it's very difficult to walk in and be like, I want you to pitch that you want someone to back your business, but not understand the finance behind it. Or to say, even from like a small terms, kind of like Jenna said, like, I, you know, going to save for a wedding or save for my dream home, but have no idea how you're going to do that. So you need to start building up the fact and not relying on or feeling uncomfortable, for example, going into a bank and talking to someone and saying, I need help. Or to say, you know, someone says, oh, you're not investing in such and such a fund, and then just not knowing how to answer it. Just having that confidence in yourself to say, yes, I run my own business, or I want my own home, and I understand my own finances. It's just that last tick box that you sort of need to like fill out being like a full powerhouse female, in my opinion.
I read something not too long ago, and it said that being financially literate is now, you know, just as accepted, just as necessary in the workforce as being tech savvy, which is crazy to me. But it's true. Like, you have to know these things if you're expecting to be able to succeed in any business field. And I think, you know, with the growth of so many amazing female entrepreneurs, it's just, you know, a necessary thing that they also are equipped with the proper skills for them to be able to handle the financial side of business as well.
Exactly. And it's not that you have to now become this financial powerhouse where you walk around like shooting numbers at everybody. But the idea is that you're confident enough to have the conversation, that you don't feel awkward in a room or when a bunch of men in an office are starting to talk about, you know, year over year growth, that you're like, I'm out, like numbers, money, like I'm not doing this. That's how you stay, you know, afloat, and how you kind of fight your way through is just having that basic comfort level of knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If we can ask you, what has your personal financial journey been, and what steps did you take to become a financial advisor?
So my financial personal journey has always been very positive, and I'm very, very lucky and blessed for that. But a lot of that came from education, educating myself, and truthfully taking the time and investing it time in myself and understanding what I want. So one of the major things that I always preach, and Sophie probably has heard Tip Tuesday / Wednesday / Thursday, whatever day of the week, I talk a lot about setting realistic goals. Because a lot of the time when you are living sort of, like I said, in the now, and you're not planning for the future, you could say to yourself like, oh yeah, I want to own a home. But that goal is not very attainable when you haven't actually set boundaries around it. Where do you want to live? When do you want to move out? How much are you willing to spend? And so when you set these types of goals, maybe it's not like perhaps like a mantra or anything like that, but it makes you remember and reminds you and motivates you on a daily basis to say, okay, if I want to move out in 5 years, I would much rather save this $500 than buy this new whatever Dyson vacuum or whatever it is that you're looking at. It helps you prioritize your money and helps you prioritize your goals and your financial future over perhaps not having that. So if you say you're just going to, I want to move out and live in a house 5, 10, 15 years, there's no urgency. Like, there's no need to take action now.
Hmm.
Yeah, so that's for me. And then when I got into the financial industry, I took a lot of designations and degrees and certificates. So obviously forensics was a great help. But then I also managed to do my LLQP, which is a insurance licensing program, because part of financial planning is also understanding the insurance risk that you have. And then, like Jenna pointed out, my professional financial advisor degree, a certified health specialist. And so for me, the more you educate and the more I learn, the more I can teach you guys. So my job is always to stay on top of what's up and coming and what's new in an industry that ironically is changing all the time, whether we like it or not. Like, markets change, strategies change, financial plans change. And so keeping up to date is the best way we can do that to help our community.
Makes total sense.
Yeah, for sure. And so I know setting realistic goals is really up there as a mantra for you, but do you have a number one financial mantra or rule of thumb that you could share with us right now?
Rule of thumb for me, I don't really do mantras. I think, you know, a lot of the time I see on Instagram, people are like, I attract wealth. It's like, that's great that you say it, but you have to actually take action on it, right? And so my idea is, it's great if you have a mantra, stick with it, but you need to make something accountable with it. So my biggest rule of thumb is always, 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 what's my goal first? So when I'm making any money decisions, how is this going to help me? How is this going to propel me in my future with my finance? How is this going to immediately satisfy me? Is it worth it, or will it satisfy me in the future? And I think in your 20s, and something that sort of, I know we'll touch on it later, but something I wish I had known is that having that mentality early on, like I can only imagine, and I lived through it. You finish school, you start making cash, and you're like, sweet, like this is the first time I've made money, like in my life, I'm going wild. And I have had so many clients come to me with so much debt because they really truthfully enjoyed those first years out of school. And now they're like, well, now what do I do? And so I think the idea is if you can get in the habit and the rule of thumb early on, how much is this really going to benefit me? Being able to pick, like to say, okay, I bought this, you know, X thing this month. I'm not going to buy Y. Y is going to be bought in the next month, so that you're at least spacing out and understanding the value of your money.
Mm. I totally agree with you on the not having mantras thing, because I mean, we could do a full episode on this, but this whole new study of like manifestation, it sounds great, but it's like, you can't just wish something into existence. You have to put the work behind it.
Exactly. Especially with money. It's like, you're not going to wake up and it's showering.
Right.
Right. Like, it's not going to happen.
I mean, I think we all wish money grew on trees, but that is definitely not the reality here.
Nope.
Kristen, you are oh so knowledgeable and you've already taught us so much, but I do wonder, is there anything you don't know about managing money?
Oh, anything I don't know. I don't know. I don't think there's anything. I mean, there's always something that you don't know, but the best part is that's what research is for. So I have had clients come to me who are like, what would you do in this situation? And the problem with finance is so much, there's a lot of hypothetical, right? So someone's like, well, what if I paid down my debt first and then bought a house? What would my, you know, future financial situation look like? Or what if I bought a house but only moderately paid off my debt? And so it's not so much as a what I don't know. It's more of, it's like a puzzle. Finance is very much like solving a puzzle. And again, my forensics background, I love it. So for me, it's just a lot of working backwards and sort of seeing where you want to end up and how we're going to get there. And so it's just like plugging different, you know, numbers into equations to figure out what best suits people. And I think when you come from a financial perspective and you look at things, no two people are the same, right? Like Jenna and Sophie, you're going to have different goals. You're going to have different timelines. You're going to have different incomes, different lifestyles. Everything is different. So every client that I work with, it's like starting from scratch. And so that gives you a little bit of liberty to sort of make sure that you are always kind of tweaking and working for what's best for your clients. But there is no like set rule. There is no set kind of approach that you have to take. There are definite like options that you should start with, but everybody is different. And I think that's where the whole idea of don't know comes into play, because you never know who's going to arrive at your door and what their situation is and how you can help them.
Mm.
Really like that. There's no like cookie cutter finances. And I think that's like in school. So I study business and I'm doing like intro to finance right now. And I want like a cookie cutter answer to all of these finance problems. And it's kind of starting to understand like, it's just not the reality. It's not the way it is. And I feel like people just want those quick answers. And that's not, it's not possible. I think that's
exactly. And there's a lot of the problem, I think, with people searching for it is if you don't go to and you don't work with someone who really kind of focuses in on helping you find what's best for you, you do get stuck in that cookie cutter, right? You get stuck in that idea of, oh dear, you know, I'm now doing what everybody else is doing, but that might not meet your goals or your needs. So you have to be very careful with not following cookie cutter.
Right. Exactly. So before we get into our listeners' questions, and we did have so many that we actually had to, you know, pull some of those out because everyone wants to know stuff. But before we do that, we do have a few personal questions that we've been dying to ask you about, if we can get some advice.
Yes, go for
okay,
it.
Okay, great.
So our first question is, we've asked you what your number one do finance is, but what's your number one finance don't?
Okay, number one, hands down, for the win, do not get into debt. There is good debt and there is bad debt. But if you can avoid what we call consumer debt, so debt that is seriously just for the fun of it, you need to avoid it at all costs. So things like buying a house and having a mortgage is good debt. Even, you know, having a car where you have to have like monthly payments, that's decent debt. Student loans is considered good debt. Anything outside of that, like credit card debt, taking out lines of credit just so that you can travel, it is not worth it. Because when you look at the implications it has on your future, it is and can be very, very detrimental. So just to give you guys an idea, if you carry like a high-end amount on your Visa card. So it means you're not paying it off monthly and it's a rolling total. Let's say it's $6,000-$7,000 a month. You can be paying up to $200 a month just to carry that. So that can equate to almost buying another car, right? So staying out of credit card debt, which I find a lot of people when they're younger do, because again, you got money, you're living life. Your credit card is never an extension of your income, right? It is not like you make $60,000 and then you make an additional 10 because you have a Visa. It's you make $60,000 that you can use your Visa for, but you cannot buy and do not buy things that you can't pay off on a monthly basis. I'm very passionate about this. Do not do it.
I really like that one. And actually, Kristen, that's something that my dad taught me like the day I got a credit card. And my parents have like probably the best credit out there because they pay off their credit card the day they put a purchase on it. And that's something that I've learned. And like that's been almost our rule of thumb as a family. But I completely understand what you're talking about there. That is one of my biggest financial fears.
Yeah, and it can spiral quickly. That's the problem.
Sophie's told me, she says her kind of rule is you never spend more than you make. And that's, I mean, that makes total sense to me because, yeah, I mean, there's one thing to have debt for a certain reason and debt that is, attainable and able to overcome. And then there are other things that basically is just you get sink deeper into a hole. And, you want to avoid that situation altogether because then you don't have to worry about digging yourself up.
Exactly. And I always tell people, if you're confused on what's good debt or bad debt, look at it like, what is this bringing me to benefit my life? Like, is a new pair of jeans benefiting my life? No, probably not, right? Is your education benefiting your life? Yes. So it is debt, but it's good debt because it gave you the knowledge to get you into generating income. Or, is buying a house good debt? Yes. Well, now I have like a roof over my head. So there, or is traveling, like traveling is a huge goal for people, but is it within means? So if, are you saving properly for it so you don't go into debt because of it?
This reminds me of the 5 by 5 rule, which is a little bit different. Is if it's not going to matter in 5 years, don't spend more than 5 minutes being upset about it. So if this purchase isn't going to matter in 5 years, it's not worth having the debt over it. Could be kind of like the translation over it.
I love that. That's really good.
So Sophie and I are specifically worried and a little bit obsessed with having enough money saved for our prospective weddings. And I mean, I guess we want to know when is the right time to start saving? Is there a too early? Like, what is your expert advice on dealing with making sure that your wedding is something within reach for you?
That's a really good question. And that's actually one of the goals when I first started out in my financial journey was my top goals were to travel, to save for my dream wedding, and to buy a home when I was married. And I hit all three of those within the 3 years that I had set the goals. And so having them, and like I said, setting a realistic goal, right? What is this goal? Like, how much does your dream wedding in your mind cost? And kind of working backwards to say, okay, if in 4 or 5 years I think I'm going to get married and I need to have $50,000 saved, how much does that equate to on a monthly basis between now and then? And that's the best way to look at it because now it gives you a number to work with. Now you're saying, okay, I need to save, call it $300 a month every month until the day that I get married in order to fund this wedding. And so it gives you sort of that working platform, that plan. I definitely would suggest using some of the advantages of like a tax-free savings account or a specialized high interest account, because that what it'll do is it'll let your money work for you. So at some point, it's great that you're saving money, but it's also nice to see that your money is going to work and making its own money. So having that balance of growth is really, really important. But for saving for that ideal wedding, it's truthfully just putting it in the forefront of everything that you do. When you are deciding, am I going to order Uber Eats for the sixth time this week, or am I going to save $100 and put it towards my wedding? And it's just that balancing act of what is most important to you that will help you save. I always tell people to at least open up another side account, though, so you do not see the money, because people who leave it in like a general checking or savings account will be like, oh, yeah, I've got 6 grand. And it's like, do you have 6 grand or is your 6 grand actually your savings? So moving it and getting out of your eyesight so that you know it's there for a later day.
Right. That
I
makes
really like
sense.
that. Jenna and I always like talk about how like when you're in your 20s, there's so many expenses ahead of you, like the wedding, the house, the car, the potential children that people maybe have in their 20s. I don't know, but it seems like a really heavy financial year from you go to like being completely, or at least I was, completely supported by my parents to on my own and like boom, a truck of finances hits me. So like I feel like the wedding is that one piece where it's something super fun and it's hard to like gauge how much is about to come at us.
Yeah, it's true. It's a lot. My goal was always, you know, I lived at home as long as I possibly could. I'm pretty sure my parents were like, wait a minute, you're 26, like, or 25, get the heck out of here. But take advantage of as much support as you can in your 20s. That is a huge, huge thing. A lot of people are like, I want to move out and live on my own because now I'm in my 20s. But think, if you're paying $1,500 a month in rent, that's $1,500 a month in somebody else's pocket and not yours. So as much as life sounds really awesome to like go out and, you know, like literally start living your life, think about how you can minimize or help yourself with all of these financial burdens that are coming. Like, what is the best plan of action? And for me, living at home and having that extra support of not paying rent for those first 3 or 4 years out of school, I saved a lot of money. Like, my entire income every year was saved. And that lessened the burden of buying a car and having a wedding and buying a house because I was saving so, so, so much.
Mm. That's really great advice.
You make it sound doable. Like, it's not scary when you explain it.
Yeah, it's definitely doable. It's just like prioritizing and putting it into your mind in the right way and not being fearful of it.
Kristen's giving every 20-year-old permission to live with their parents as long as they possibly can.
Woohoo!
Sorry, mom and dad.
Exactly. But yeah, so we've talked about this on previous episodes, but we always hear adults saying that they wish they started investing in their 20s. I feel like it's such a buzz thing. I wish I started investing in my 20s. Like, I would have been rich by now. So what would your advice be for someone in their 20s who's starting to think about investing, whether that's in stock or in like something like a TFSA, and where should they start?
I would say my wish is that everybody in their 20s started investing too. And the reason why that is, and this is something that nobody really knows or thinks about, the most valuable thing with money is time. That is what dictates everything, time. And the longer you are saving, the longer things are invested, the more money you have and the more money that you make. And so the more that you can not only get into a good habit, because in your 20s, if you can get into that habit, it's only going to get better because your income's only growing, your lifestyles are only growing. And so you're only going to become more financially prepared because you're already in the habit of saving. But to look back, if you save like a dollar in your 20s, it's about valued at $7 in your retirement. So it just shows you how much extra money you can have when you are starting early. There's never a bad time to start. Like, I've had clients come to me in their 50s and be like, what do I do? There's always a time to make the change and make, you know, investing a part of your portfolio and your lifestyle. But if you can do it in your 20s, my gosh, I can't wait to see what your generation has to offer because you will be so financially set for yourself. Mm. What people in their 20s don't do, and I didn't, like I'm for sure didn't do this. You don't think about what retirement looks like. Why would you? Like, you haven't even got a job, right? Like, you haven't even left school yet. But the idea is, you think about it, when you're 65, and you decide, okay, I want to retire. I want to go live on my beach, sip my pina colada, like play with my grandkids. That's life for me. I want to spoil them. From 65 to the, like we're living roughly till 90 now. Like that's an estimated age. That is a long time that you have to be self-supporting yourself without working. And people forget that, right? Like nobody wants to be working when they're 82. Like that's just not realistic. And so you need to start saving little by little now to get it to the lifestyle that you want when you are in retirement. The problem becomes the later you start this process, the more money on a monthly basis you have to save, which becomes a little bit less attainable, right? To save $100 or $200 a month from your 20th birthday to 65 is much more attainable than trying to save $2,000 a month from your 50th birthday to 65, just as an example kind of idea. So starting young, yes, please do it. Please, please, please. How to do it and what to focus on? That's a really good question. And I do think that there is value in working with a professional on this. And the reason why is because people who don't understand investing or don't understand the markets tend to have not as great return on their money because they have A, the inability to watch the markets every day and make trades every day because they're just like, A, I'm too busy for this. And B, what the heck is this? Like, what's happening? Why am I making these trades? But also because when things happen, like markets crash or things spike and there's these trends, people tend to bandwagon, right? It's like, oh my God, my money's crashing. I'm going to sell. That's actually the worst time to sell. So when you're working with a professional, so what I do with like my clients is when I help them do their investing, I help them understand the process, build that knowledge, but also make sure that their money is accurately diversified in different funds and helping them on a daily basis. It removes that fear factor of making wrong decisions and jeopardizing your future just solely on emotion, right? So, you know, Jenna might call me and be like, Kristen, the market's crashed. What do I do? And I'd say, Jenna, no worries. We got this. We're just going to leave it. It's going to bounce back. and then we've saved her from making poor decisions. So if you're starting, just read, look at things, kind of don't fall into the trap of doing what everybody else is doing. Just because everybody's buying Bitcoin doesn't mean you have to buy a Bitcoin or whatever the new trend is, and feel confident to talk to someone. Like, advice is free to a degree, right? So you could, you know, consult with me, call me, email me, and be like, Kristen, explain investing, or what would you suggest? And I will talk to you about it. That's what most people who are really, really passionate about what they do will help with. Going, you know, at worst case, going into a bank and asking to sit down with a specific financial specialist could be a great benefit for you. So just starting to gather that information. And even if it's not necessarily like invested right away, that savings plan. So saying, okay, I'm going to put $200 away into a TFSA. And then at some point I'm going to learn how to invest it in the next 5, 6, 7 months, but just at least making the habit of starting the savings process.
Okay, I'm convinced. I'm going to invest now. I'm sold. I want the beach pina colada. I'm into it.
I want to spoil my grandchildren.
Absolutely.
I feel like that is a thought that is in my head so much. Like, how am I going to live till 90? Like, what happens if the money runs out? Like, that is a very terrifying thought. And Jenna knows that I'm a planner at heart, and that is a thought that lives in my head every day. And
well, Sophie, not to scare you, I've seen it. I've seen people where we are now outliving our cash flow. Like, it's a thing, because medicine and everything is so much more advanced that we are living so much longer than people planned for when they like were in their 1920s and they're still living, right? Like, they had no idea. And so the more that you can be aware of that fear, the better, because then you can make the right moves now to protect against it.
Yeah, exactly.
So moving on, and we were talking perfectly about this, to the 21st century finances, which is looking oh so different than, you know, it was before. Do you have like apps or any, you know, type of things that you use for financing? What do you recommend to make financing so much more attainable by just having it on your handy dandy device?
So ironically, maybe this is aging me a little bit, I am a super old school, like paper and pen type person, solely because it makes me accountable. Sometimes what I find with apps is like, someone's like, oh, use this budgeting app. And then it automatically uploads all of the things that you spend. But do people actually go in and look at it and analyze it? Probably not, right? So when you have to, my whole idea is, if you can find a time, like once a month, call it a Sunday morning, you put on some nice music, you pour yourself a coffee, get in your comfies and sit in your chair and literally just go through and peruse what your Visa bill was this month and what are your goals and have you been saving, and making it that time that you set aside for it using an Excel spreadsheet. Like, I make, and I can like send it out to anybody who wants it, like a very simple budget spreadsheet to help you track what you're spending, but it makes you more accountable. It makes you more invested in the process than using an app. I don't think that it's bad that people use an app at all, but I do think it sort of removes you from the process. It's just like a habit of like, yay, it uploaded. But what are you learning from it? What are you actually gauging? And that hands-on activity makes you more accountable and sort of teaches you along the way as well. So yeah. I am old school.
I feel like I have an app, and the app sends me emails very frequently, and I never open those emails. It's like, how's your budget doing? I'm like, okay, maybe later. And I feel like it removes the accountability off of myself. And so that actually is good advice.
Yeah. And it's not like you have to do it every day and be obsessed with it, but like, you know, people have like morning routines where they get up and they meditate and they journal. Make that a happy thing. Like, make it like, I'm going to review my goals. Like, I'm so excited to see between, you know, January 1st and January 31st, how much money did I save? Well, I saved $2,000 this month. That's amazing. And you can have that moment with yourself as a bit of like growth, personal growth, and also just making it that like, if you didn't hit your goals, why not? Like, what can we do? What do we need to change? How can I approach this? It's kind of just like a little bit of homework for yourself, but it's worth it in the end. Mm-hmm.
I think apps have like changed the game in the sense that we now have this weird expectation of downloading the app is the whole thing. So you download a yoga app and you're like, great, now I'm fit. And it's not that simple. And so a lot of people fall into that wormhole of, you know, if I download a finance app, then that's all I have to do. And I think, like you said, doing it on pen and paper kind of takes that, you know, gratitude of I did something away, and you actually have to do the work, but it doesn't have to be crazy hard. It can be as simple as 10 to 15 minutes a day.
That's exactly it, Jenna. It literally is like looking at your Visa bills from this month, looking at where you spent perhaps more than what your goal was. So I always tell people to have a goal budget. Like, my goal is to not spend more than $200 on food every month, let's say. And then you go and you're like, oh my God, I spent $500 this month. What happened? And just taking that moment to say, where did I overspend? It's like, oh, I went to all the high-end grocery stores and I shouldn't have. Next month, my new goal is going to be really watching that. And so anytime I go to get groceries, I make sure that I stop for a moment and say, okay, am I in the right spot? Am I doing the right thing? And so it does make you that little bit more accountable, but it really shouldn't take you more than 15 minutes, especially as you get better at it too, right? You know what you're looking for. And if you're really good at budgeting, then your budget's going to be right on track. And you're like, sweet, I've looked at it. Everything's good. Moving on. Like, it shouldn't take that much time. Yeah.
Kristen's making money a happy thing. That's what she said before. Make it a happy thing. It shouldn't be a stressful, terrifying thing. It can be a happy thing that you do with your morning journal.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've been very selfish and we've been asking a lot of our own questions, and I'm sure we could keep going for hours on end, but I think now would be a great time to transition onto some of our listeners' questions that they sent in. We have a little short list that we've gathered from the many that were sent to us, and these are some of our favorites. We think they're a really good variety, and I mean, they're all just like us in the sense that everyone's saying, how do I even start or what do I even do? But they're simple questions, but I think they're also necessary questions to ask.
Love it.
Do you want me to read the first one like it's a real person?
Oh, please do. With the accent and all.
I think I'm going to read like a Dear Financial Fortune Teller.
Ah.
Okay.
I love it.
So, Dear Financial Fortune Teller, I just got my first credit card. I feel like a grown-up, but I'm single and don't plan on changing my status anytime soon. So how do you recommend bumping up my credit score? I want my mortgage allowance to be a reasonable price to buy a reasonable size property on my own. Help!
I love this. First of all, that was a great rendition. Okay, good question to ask. So your credit card, great to have a credit card, great to get it. The younger you are, the better, because your credit score is based off of having available credit limits. So the first thing to keep in mind when you're getting a credit card, the purpose of it when you're looking to build credit is not to use the credit card to its maximum capacity. So when somebody is looking, or a bank or a financial institution is looking at your quote unquote credit score, it's that you have available credit that you are not using. So for example, if you have a $10,000 limit, but you use $3,000 a month, that's perfect. They love that because they're seeing that you're not maximizing and living off of credit. So great that this person is open to credit card. Keep it, use it, make sure you're paying it off monthly, but do not, you know, max it out all the time, because that's not going to look that great on your credit score. And keeping it for as long as you can. So usually every 5 years, your credit history rolls over. So keeping this said credit card for 5 years is amazing. When it comes to getting like mortgages are actually very dependent on a lot of different things, not just your credit score. That plays a part in it for sure. Things they look for is like making sure you don't have a lot of debt, what kind of debt, if you do have debt, any other payments that are mandatory, like having car payments and stuff, that will factor into how much you can get for a mortgage. But one of the biggest things that you have that will affect your mortgage is your down payment and your income. So having a stable job with a stable income to support a mortgage payment, plus having at least 20%, if not more, to put down on your house. So that is really where you could do the research. So if you're looking at buying a house and you're like, oh, this house is $1 million, you have to have 20% minimum to put down for that. Or if you're like, I'm looking at a $300,000 house, again, 20% to put down for that. So starting with identifying what kind of house, and I tell people, like, you don't have to be fearful to talk to a real estate agent before you're ready to buy. You can call one up and say, I'm just looking at getting an idea and understanding where I need to be saving or how I'm doing this. And so look at your dream location, look at the type of exact house that you want. Maybe you're not buying it today, but look at how much it's going to cost you and do the math. How much do I have to save to get that down payment? And sort of working again, working backwards. Finance is always about working backwards. Like, my goal is here, and how do I get there? And work all the steps down to where you are today to get there. So for this individual, definitely take a look in the area that you want to live in. See what the prices are at right now. Is crazy. Totally respect that. But my input is always to over assume than under assume. So like, if you end up saving $50,000 and you only need 30, that's fantastic. You've got extra cash flow. If you end up saving 30 and you needed 50, it's not going to help you. So always overestimate, go for the big picture and try and save towards those numbers.
Makes sense. Makes total sense.
It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Explain it a lot better than a lot of other people could.
Right.
I think that's
my job.
That's why she gets paid.
Yeah.
This question says, I'm sure a lot of you are like me and are emotional spenders. When I get sad, my credit card pays the price and my online shopping cart fills up crazy fast. Please tell me you have a cure for impulse buys.
Impulse buy. So it's funny, a lot of my clients that I work with are actually in their mid-20s. So 23 to 26 is my average client right now, which I'm obsessed with because it shows that these people are like ready to make major financial moves young in their life. Like they're just finishing school, but they're like, teach me your ways, which I love. But I do see a lot of impulse spending. I've said it probably 10 times already on our podcast today, but your emotional spending, think of it as, am I adding this to my cart, this $300 that I'm going to put on my Visa bill, or am I going to take that $300 and put it towards my dream wedding? And make emotional spending a thing. I love it, but spend on the right stuff. Like take it and press like e-transfer to my TFSA. And that is your way of doing an online checkout, right? Instead of like browsing, I even have clients who've gone to the extent of like, they browse, they put things in their basket and they go like, nope, yeah, not buying that. Transferring that same amount of money to their savings account. And so it's all about prioritizing. It's taking a minute to think, yes, I'm very sad. Like Sophie said, I'm sad for these 5 minutes. Is it gonna give me value in 5 years? No. What will help me feel really good is knowing that I'm a step closer or to getting out of this rut, to getting out of this emotional state that I'm in, because I'm going to be buying a house in 5 years, or I'm going to be getting married in 5 years, or I'm planning that dream trip to Greece when you can travel again. That is what you just need to change your mindset. Perhaps that we can call Jenna a mantra if we will, but that idea of changing and manipulating how you're thinking about your money.
Right.
Think of it like, I don't need this. I'd rather save.
Just before this call, Jenna told me that she had $700 worth of clothes.
Don't out me like that.
Kimmy, you didn't buy it.
I didn't buy it, and I don't plan to.
No, but I think that it would be amazing if you transferred all of that money into a TFSA.
Yes, make sure you do the transfer, even if it's not the full 700. Just take some of it because you have the cash because you're thinking about it.
That's true.
Move the money.
Okay.
And I don't think you ever intended to spend it, but it's that same idea of that emotional browsing online.
Exactly.
It's so satisfying.
And I find I get the same gratification just from doing the browsing, and then I don't actually have to click place order. I get, you know, my fix of shopping just from the browsing, and then I can actually put my money where it deserves to go.
Yeah.
I love that.
Exactly.
Get the fix done just by the browsing. That's the best.
It's like the equivalent of window shopping online.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so our next question from one of our followers is, what the hell is a write-off and does it apply to me?
That is so great. What the hell is a write-off? That is a good question. So this is a tax question. So write-offs are when you are self-employed, because you don't run like as an employee, you're not responsible for anything, right? You go in 9 to 5, you clock out, you don't pay expenses, you don't pay water bills, you don't pay for client entertaining. Write-offs are when you're a self-employed individual, you're able to literally write off. So say that my money as Kristen spent on this is actually for my business. And so it's your ability to say to the government, yes, I spent, you know, I made 60 grand this year, but 10 grand of which I used to benefit my business, to, you know, drive to my client's house, which is gas, to entertain them and take them out for dinner, to mail things, because I have to, you know, post some letters to them in the mail. So all of those things are items that you could use to reduce your income and tax bill. So it's just a way of moving what you're spending on to different categories when you're filing your taxes. If you're an employee, you're not really writing anything off. The only thing that you might be writing off this year is if you worked at home, you might be able to write off the $400 of a work from home office. But usually as an employee, you're really not writing anything off. It's when you're self-employed and or owning your own business. Don't worry about it.
There's a hilarious scene from an episode of Schitt's Creek. And it's so funny to me because it's the question we all have when we just use the term, oh, I'll just write it off so casually without actually knowing what it means. So if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. But it's so funny, and it's just about some store owner saying, oh, I just wrote it off, and they don't really know what that means. So it's good to now know that it does have a meaning, and it's actually not that hard to define.
And that's a really good thing, too, because I've seen a meme, too, Jenna, that was like, she's a business owner, and she's like, oh, I bought like a new outfit. And her husband's like, well, where'd the money come from? She's like, oh, I wrote it off.
Nope.
He was like, what does that mean? And she's like, the government paid for it. It has to be a business expense. Like it has to be pertaining to the actual growth of your company. Buying a new outfit, although may help you with your appearance in your work, you can't write off. So it's things that are specific to work.
Okay. My next question is, food and groceries cost a lot of money. How do I get to a place where it's not scary to line up at checkout?
Okay, so that's a really great question. I always tell people, yes, food and groceries are expensive. It's just one of those needs. So when you are looking at budgeting, you have to budget that in as a necessity because you cannot go without food and groceries. Making sure that you are shopping at grocery stores that are well priced. So in staying away from like the high-end brand name grocery stores, focusing more on like, you know, your food basics or your fresh goes or whatever's kind of within a good quality food, but at a better price, no frills, those kind of things. And shopping really truthfully for anything that you can get that is not processed, right? I know that's like, now I'm a health nut too, but when you're buying straight food, it's going to cost you a lot less. Like buying just like buying apples or buying, you know, making your own things at home versus buying prepackaged items. It will save you a little bit. And truthfully, like a budget, planning out exactly what you need grocery wise, where you're not overspending and wasting food so that you're very regimented in, I'm buying $200 a month of groceries for myself. And that needs to fall into as much as I can get and not waste in that $200. So just also don't go to the grocery store hungry. That's one of my
True.
Things. I always go hungry and I always end up with like so much stuff. And I get home, I'm like, I don't need any of this. I'm like, I just was so hungry. So don't shop hungry and just buy what you need at a reasonable price.
It astonishes me how much people are willing to spend for pre-cut fruit. Like it astonishes me that it's
that's
a
exactly
$10
it.
Thing of pineapple. That's probably a quarter of a pineapple that costs $10.
Which you can buy for $2 and you can buy a $2 pineapple.
It blows my
crazy.
Mind.
Yep. I totally agree with you.
Okay. So our last question, and we've kind of already touched on this, but this, I guess, listener, follower asked us, where is the best place to build a retirement fund? And how early do I need to start doing that? Am I too late?
Ooh, am I too late? Well, I don't know how old you are, but first off, no, you're never too late. Building a retirement fund, I would always suggest you use your RRSP, which is literally your registered retirement savings fund. However, that fund is only available when you're working. So you have to be working to do so. So if you're early in your 20s, you're in school, you're not working, I would use your TFSA, your tax-free savings account. Now, the reason why I recommend using either one of these two account types is because they are the most tax-efficient way of saving money. So if you're trying to buy like a regular stock or mutual fund outside of these accounts, any growth that it experiences. So let's say you put in $100 and it grew to $600 this year, that growth, 50% of it is taxable to you that year, right? When it's in an RRSP or it's in a TFSA, they are not acquiring tax. So you put in $100, you grew it to $600, no questions asked. And so when you're young, the best way to capitalize on growth is using these government style accounts. So your RRSP, the really great thing about it is you put money into it and the money can stay there till retirement, or you can actually use it to buy your first home up to $30,000. You can take it out and buy your first home. Really great. I always recommend everybody do this because when you put money in, the year that you actually put the money into your RSP, you get a tax break. So if you made $60,000 and you put in $10,000 into your RSP, the government will say, oh, you only made $50,000 this year. So that $10,000 isn't taxed. So you might actually get money back from the government. With your TFSA, you can put the money in and take it out as frequently as you need to, and it doesn't attract tax, and it's got great growth. So both of these accounts 100% are your starting points. And just to build off of that again, I think it's so valuable if you talk to somebody like myself who can sit down with you and say, okay, Sophie, for you specifically, this is your goal. Your goal is to, you don't want to get married and you do want to buy a house. So then our goal is going to be using your RSP. And Jenna, your goal is, I don't want to buy a house ever. I want to rent and just be like locum and kind of run around and be crazy, but I want to have a wedding. Okay, for you, we're talking about a TFSA. And so having that sort of one-on-one guidance to help maximize where you will be and where you should be is, I think, very valuable.
I think that's the most perfect ending question. I'm glad we ended with that one because it sums up everything so nicely where you said, you know, it's never too late to get started and it's never too late to start becoming financially literate and financially in charge of yourself. And also, you know, money is not something to be feared. It's something that you can handle and it's something that can actually be a resource to you rather than a burden. And there are so many resources out there that are there to help you. There are people, there are programs, and the more you know, the more equipped you are to create a life for yourself that you want to live and that you don't have to be stressed about.
Exactly.
And Kristen, you shared with us recently that you just launched an amazing new program. Can you just tell us a little bit more about it and how our listeners can get involved?
Of course. So I actually launched a platform or program called Money Manifest. And it actually stemmed from talking to a few younger, in their mid-20s, clients of mine who were like, I love working with you. They work with me one-on-one, but they also want to continue to build that knowledge. And so it's a very, very easy to follow, similar to like our conversation today, of anything and everything you need to know about money and how to really truthfully dumb it down so that you can make wise decisions from the beginning, like starting at the goal setting, starting at moving forward from goal setting into talking about which accounts to be saving in, talking about how to change your money mindset into helping you, which, you know, learn when to spend, when not to spend, and then understanding like how you work backwards. So like, what do you want your retirement to look like? You may not think about it often, but to say, okay, I do want to buy a cottage and retire at my cottage. And then I will teach you how to, you know, build those numbers to say, I'm 20, how much do I need to be saving for that goal? So it's just a really, really great, easy sort of, we never got taught finance in like, unless you took business like Sophie, you don't learn about money. You don't learn about personal finance. In high school, you learn more about how to play a recorder like in elementary school than you do about personal finance. And I wish that the recorder could, you know, fix everything, but it can't. So this is just like that one quick course that you need to say, okay, I feel like I understand personal finance enough to make decisions for myself.
I think there needs to be a petition going around for putting personal finance courses in the elementary school curriculums.
I think that they
Exactly.
are. I think that
They're
they
starting
are.
to.
And I've heard my little cousins talking about it, which is amazing. And I'm going to be so jealous when all of my like currently 6-year-old
Right.
cousins are like millionaires and I'm sitting as my like 40-year-old self. Like,
But you don't have
what do
to.
I do? But I don't have to because I can
Now
go to
we
Money
know, right?
Manifest. Yeah.
Right. Before we let you go, Kristen, we plan to ask all of our guest mentors this. What is one thing you wish you knew in your 20s?
Oh, I wish, I think I already said it, but I'll say it again. I wish I knew the value of time. I wish that I truthfully understood that, you know, yes, you're young in your 20s and retirement is like I remember starting my first job and I got my first letter. It was like, you'll be retiring in 2053. And I was like, ha, 2053, that's hilarious. But it comes quite quickly. And you need to remember the value of that time that you have now, that even if you're saving $50 a month, $20 a month, I don't care what it is. The time value is so, so, so important. So when you're questioning if you should be or how you should be saving, remember that the time that you have now is the best time.
Man, I mean, it wraps it all up. Time is money.
Time is money.
Yeah, and we said it before and we'll say it again. The goal of this podcast is to stop our listeners from ever saying, I wish I knew that in my 20s. So honestly, if you're multitasking right now, come back. Time is everything, and you can start now and be really financially free in your future.
Yeah.
So, we hope you found this episode as helpful as Jenna and I have definitely found this. We want to give the biggest thank you to Kristen for her amazing advice and support today. Please make sure that you check her out on her amazingly beautiful financial social platforms at The Financial Fortune Teller on Instagram and check out her awesome new program, Money Manifest. I'm sure you can find it through the link in her bio.
Oh, yeah. If you did enjoy this episode, please make sure to subscribe to our podcast for more and give us a rating on all major streaming platforms. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, you name it, and check out our new website, www.my20somethingspodcast.com.
We love you all so much, and we have complete faith in you and your financial decisions. We are wishing you another amazing week. Stay happy and healthy. Bye, guys.